This is Joel Spolsky, the host of the Stack Overflow podcast. Our podcast depends on listeners like you, who aren't you because you're already listening, and we need more listeners like you. We don't have any kind of fancy marketing budget, so please, if you enjoy this podcast, tell your friends to subscribe. Thank you. I have an observation. You know, when I wasn't here and you guys substituted for me, you sort of split up the jobs of One Minute Tech Review and the rant and the Constitution.
Joel, do you think one other man or woman could do all the things that you do, Joel?
That's what I'm saying. How come I come back and I immediately have to do all this stuff?
Those are your bits. If you want to hand them out, feel free to hand them out.
All right, I'm going to start hiring people.
Is that the rant?
That is. It's better than the rant I have.
Don't cover Sabbath elevators.
You know, the Shabbos elevator in the hospital where I was had a detailed explanation in Yiddish of how it worked. I don't know why you didn't see that, David. This is the Stack Overflow podcast, episode 108, recorded Thursday, May 4th, 2017 at Stack Overflow headquarters in New York, New York, home of Edgar Allan Poe, where more than 8 million people live in peace and enjoy the benefits of democracy. Today's podcast is brought to you by peanut butter. Yay! The best way to get your dog to eat a pill. Peanut butter is creamy, it's butter, and it's shelf-stable. Warning, contains peanuts. And Stack Overflow Enterprise. It's like Stack Overflow, but for your enterprise. That really what they... I'm just reading. Visit stackoverflowbusiness.com for more details. That's a really long URL. You know what this reminds me of? I'm sorry. I just need to interrupt temporarily. This reminds me that there was a time when it was recommended that your domain name be 8 letters or less because of command line restrictions on IBM mainframe computers, which only allowed up to 8 letters per argument in the command line. Okay, on today's podcast, VP of Engineering, David Fullerton.
Hello.
VP of Stack Overflow, Jay Henlon.
Hello.
And our news editor is Ilana Itzhaki.
Hello.
On today's episode, award-winning speaker, consultant, writer, co-founder, and the former manager of UX design and engineering at Trulia, Sarah Dresner.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Hi, Sarah. Welcome. I am your host, Joel Spolsky. Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back, me.
Thanks, Joel.
Good to see you, Joel.
We should be welcoming you back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back.
Yes.
You were out for a while.
I have been
missing. We had to have some poor replacements like that Anil character.
Yes. You know what? I'm going to do the 1 minute tech review before the rant.
Wow.
Okay. And the 1 minute tech review.
Is it our podcast? Are you reviewing the podcast?
Yes. I am now reviewing the Stack Overflow podcast with host Anil Dash.
Oh, thank God it's not me. Oh, I'm so happy. I'm so happy.
Number 106 and 107. Yeah. Jay also did 105. I'm not going to review Jay's, but Anil's was pretty good.
Oh.
That's my review.
Wait, which one? Are both of them? They were pretty good. Adequate?
Yeah. I mean, they were better than I thought they were going to be. I thought they were going to be terrible. And they were pretty good.
He did not bring shame to our family, safe
no,
to say.
Nice. No, all our podcasts are terrible. The ones that we make, or that I make at least.
Oh, so he was exceeding expectations by making non-terrible podcasts.
By miles. He had lots of jokes. I'm told none of them had to be edited out in post, whereas almost all of my jokes have to get edited out.
That's entirely correct. Yeah. He somehow avoided saying something. Anything.
Nothing. There were no goats in the podcast or anything. Okay. He's like, what? What's with the goat?
I feel like we're not going to escape whatever Joel wants to say about goats. It's like it's inevitable. It'll be hanging over us the whole podcast till it happens.
It is okay to mention a goat, you guys. It's okay. It's fine.
Goats are funny.
I'm going to actually resume my 1 minute tech review later. Like, I have another 1 minute tech review because I think I only used 1 second. Okay, I have a short rant and a long rant. Short rant. Please listen carefully as our menu options have changed. When they say that, first of all, A, no, they haven't. Every single company
it can't always be true, can
says,
it? It can't.
Please listen carefully as our menu options have changed. And number two, who the hell is memorizing the menu options? Typing long strings of numbers.
I have done that for something that I had to call the same number like 14 times in a row just to like get through to the right person. And I had memorized all the numbers by the end of it. And it was actually super helpful that you could just ignore the prompts and just punch in all the numbers to get where you wanted
ahead.
To go.
Yeah.
But I think the kind of person who does that is already punching the numbers in before that stupid disclaimer airs.
Yeah, they're not even listening to please listen carefully as our menu options have changed. Anyway, thanks to Jason for that idea. Much longer rant hospitals. You may have noticed that I was missing for a month. So I would like to rant
hospital.
About No, I was in one. Oh. I wish to complain about hospitals because it turns out they're not very pleasant places to stay.
Was it the food?
I could not eat the food I was there for 5 days, 6 days.
That's a long time to not eat any food.
I didn't mind because I had no appetite.
I feel like if you drink no water that long, you die. But too long to eat not eat food. Too.
I drank water, but I made Jared go get me Fiji water from there.
It feels like one of the obvious things that is wrong with hospitals is the sheer number of times they wake you up in the middle of the night for no good reason.
Yes.
When you clearly need to be recovering from something. Otherwise, correct, you wouldn't be in a hospital.
Yeah. So they have this logic of like there's a morning rotation where the doctors come see you once a day and they want to see all your statistics, including the results of your blood tests. So in order to get the blood back, you know, out to the labs and then tested, they have to come around at 4 a.m. and take a little bit of blood out of everybody. So that's already on my list. I had some kind of weird drug. I was under anesthesia for the surgery that I had. And so everything smelled terrible. And it turns out the hospitals don't smell great, but it was actually worse because of this weird drug I had taken for like a whole week.
That's weird.
Yeah. That may have been why I had no appetite.
Give you a heightened sense of smell that like...
No, everything was just disgusting.
Oh, like, it was like those
what is that smell? Like that
food you can eat that makes everything taste like sour.
That's exactly what I thought
sweet.
Of. Yeah.
What is that called?
There's like a magical berry that you can buy in pill form or berry form.
Is it anesthesia?
Then you eat a lemon and it basically breaks.
It's probably a key ingredient in anesthesia.
You can order it from Amazon. It like breaks your sour taste buds.
They didn't ask you what flavor anesthesia you wanted. Oh, I guess the default must be whatever this berry is.
It took a week to wear off. When I got out of the hospital, at least like the new things that I was smelling didn't have that. But if I smelled something that I had previously smelled in the hospital, it still smelled like the old thing for another week. It was really weird and quite awful. And one of the reasons I had no appetite. And the reason, by the way, I made Jared get me Fiji water is because I knew that whatever brand of water he got me in the hospital, I would have a terrible association with. And I wanted to pick a brand that I would never want to buy again. Under any circumstances whatsoever.
Fiji, is the only choice.
Fiji's
Dannon,
even worse because it's like they literally take the water
in
Fiji, which I'm sure has loads of water because it's a little tiny island in the middle of the South Pacific. And they put it on 747s and they
Fiji,
fly it
right?
to America.
Like, imagine if you were saying
the worst idea ever.
We need some water.
Yeah.
We got to make it clean and we got to put it in a bottle.
Sure.
What would be like the first thing you'd think of like, what should we optimize for? I'd be like, I guess closest
like a muddy island in the
probably
Pacific.
Probably closest water is what I would want to use.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay. But what if we went the
furthest.
Total opposite way? What if we went with farthest away water and just shipped that here and we made that the thing?
Purist. Is anybody doing the like melted Antarctic ice? Because we're going to run out of that pretty soon. But it might be a good business model right now.
You can because it's probably been frozen for 100,000 years before there was any kind of pollution.
Super
on Earth.
Pure. Okay. So anyway, hospitals get a thumbs down. Is that's our review?
Except when they're saving your life.
Oh, no, this was a rant, not a tech review. Got it.
So thumbs down on the food. Thumbs down on the effect of your smell.
Super thumbs up.
You are
on
back
the staff.
Alive.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You want to keep
there
a
we go. There we go.
The nurses at NYU Langone absolutely highly recommend it. Amazing, unbelievably nice, very, very good bedside manner.
Were they doing totally amazing things there, would you say?
We're doing amazing things.
That's their motto, isn't it? We're doing amazing things here. Isn't that
sure.
Are they?
Yeah, they're like every hospital.
That's a good motto. That should be our motto.
It's true. It's so meaningless.
I think it's weird that like now that hospitals are all these giant conglomerates and like they all own like 17 hospitals that all overlap zones. It's weird how now like hospitals are like advertising on TV.
We're better.
Like drug companies do. Where they're trying to pitch you like, if you had cancer, you'd want to use our hospital.
Yeah, in Florida, they're like, they run billboards on the highway advertising the current wait in the emergency room. So if you're like, oh, this one's 30 minutes, I'm just going to keep driving until the next hospital.
Oh,
that's right outside the Holland Tunnel.
What?
Yeah. Oh, no, this is in Florida. I've seen this.
But these
bunch,
are like the signs that are like current traffic to bridge, like kind of thing.
It's and like it's, a full-size billboard with like that, a little clock built into it.
Yeah.
So my last question, Joe, was there a moment when you were kind of worried, you got out and you're like, oh my God, everything stinks. And you thought like, oh my God, the whole world, my loved ones, my home and everything around me actually smells terrible, but I never had to know it till now. And the surgery has made me able to
although
realize.
That is an episode of 30 Rock, which by the way, while I was home recovering, I watched the entire series.
Pretty funny.
So let's do an AMA. Ask Joel anything about 30 Rock. Literally. Because I have just binge watched the entire, all seven seasons and I know everything. I know all Liz Lemon's boyfriends. I got it all down, including Chris Cross.
I don't remember Chris Cross
he was
being
in
her boyfriend.
Season 7.
Wait, is Chris Cross one person?
But yeah.
Two.
I think it's two people.
No, it's James Marsden or whatever his name is, was the actor who played Liz's boy. It doesn't matter.
Oh.
Isn't that guy friends with Wolverine? Isn't he friends with Wolverine, James Marsden?
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. No, you know what I thought for a while? I didn't think that it was the drugs. I thought it was Purell. But then, because I was like,
which
why
is
does
everywhere.
It smell like that? And I smelled the Purell and it smelled like that. And I was like, it must be that because that's everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized it wasn't. It was like everything. I mean, my toothpaste was smelling like that. I ate some saltines.
This kind of sounds like the worst superpower ever. Like,
everything smells terrible.
Super smell.
Yes.
Yeah, it's one of those superpowers that comes with a big downside. It's like a blessing and a curse at the same time.
I don't want to worry any of our listeners. This was a voluntarily thing that I went into the hospital for, which actually improved my heart, which they had to open in order to improve it. And I was home for about 4 weeks recovering, 3 weeks, actually 1 week in the hospital and 3 weeks of recovery. And now I'm like pretty much 130% better. Like I go to the gym now and I can do more of everything. So whatever that surgery was.
Is going to the gym less terrible than I remember?
He doesn't even know what he got. He has no idea.
It was like my septal reductidomy. I can't remember.
Joel does seem more, more energized, full of vim and vigor. And also maybe unrelated. He's got two black eyes and his nose is beautiful. Just beautiful.
Aw. What superpower is that? Anyway, I'm better than I was even before I went in, so it was all worth it, including the week of bad smell. Okay, let's do the real one-minute tech review. Real one-minute tech review is, once I got out of the hospital, they said you should just walk a lot, because that's what they tell heart patients.
Sure.
And by a lot, they meant, you know, to the front door and back at least twice a day. Because normally, you're dealing with people that have had a heart attack. That's what they mean by heart patients.
As if you were someone that doesn't live in a bed like that.
There was some point at which the nutritionist comes into the hospital room and starts telling me not to eat salt. And Jared is like, that's not correct. Like, what statistics do you have? He's not a heart patient. He doesn't have high blood pressure. That no salt is for people with high blood pressure. And it's a bad idea, even for the people with high blood pressure. It barely ever really matters. So you go around telling everybody not to eat salt, and there's no reason.
I feel like back in the nurse's station, there is a Polaroid photograph and Jared's name on a list and a warning to others who might have to interact with him in the future.
He might have muttered this under his...
It's also partly why hospital food tastes so terrible. Because it's all made without salt.
Yeah. You feel really bad. People that are sort of in there on the last few days of their lives, and for whatever reason, somebody has decided that they have to have the heart-healthy diet, which tastes like nothing.
The opposite of what they do in prison.
Yeah, where you get your choice
of there you can pick any food you want. I don't care.
Well, I mean, as long as they deliver to the prison.
It's probably not that great.
I don't think routinely in prison you get to pick whatever meal you
want. No. This is sad. Let's move back to anything else.
It's only death row. So they said I should start walking a little bit. And so, first of all, I had long since lost my various Fitbit-type things that we had. So I just started using Apple Health, which actually, if you've got an iPhone in your pocket, it is already recording your steps, which is sort of surprising. And you can go in there and see how many steps you've taken with the phone in your pocket, at least, under Apple Health. And I started using that. And you know what? It's good enough. I don't know if it's the right number of steps, but definitely on days when you walk more, it goes up by more. So it's pretty accurate.
I think it's smart.
It does.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure, I think at least if you have the watch, I think without the watch too, though, it checks it against the GPS. Like, in other words, to figure out how fast you're... Because it's measuring... The accelerometer is basically measuring bounces.
Boing, boing, boing.
But they don't know, like, if you're taking giant steps or small steps. And I believe the way they estimate calories is they check it a few times against the distance.
Against
and then
the
they just
GPS.
Assume that's right. And they use that most times without keeping the GPS running. And then they just check in a while to figure out.
It also tells me how many flights you've climbed, which is interesting because I didn't really used to be able to climb stairs so well. And now I do that for fun.
Can we go back for a second? Like, do you have to like ask for one of those chairs? What did you do? That seems like a common problem, like having to go up a stair or two.
Yeah. Oh, so before the surgery, I would go upstairs and then I had to rest. Like, I could go up one flight and then rest.
You were really hiding how infirm you were from us for quite some time.
That's a huge infirmity.
Like, I was fine. I couldn't climb a flight of stairs without passing out, but I, you know, big picture. It was good.
Yeah.
It was good.
Well, browning out. I wouldn't say blacking out.
We've been like living in like a Weekend at Bernie's movie for like 5 years and didn't know it. Okay.
Okay. So anyway, Apple Health is actually not entirely completely terrible. And once I started going back to the gym, which was about a week and a half ago, I wanted to actually log. Like, they told me to start with really, really low weights, like 10 pounds or whatever. And I did that for a week and then I sort of doubled it and then I'm going to double it again. But I wanted to log this so I could remember how much weights I was doing. And so there are 5 billion, trillion, million, gazillion little apps on the App Store that will let you actually log your workouts. And every single one of them is missing some feature that you definitely need.
Yep.
And also has 8,000 features that get in the way that you have to slog through that you are never going to do. They're like, you know, how much time did you spend upside down today?
In the Batman boots.
So I did not try them all. However, I just sort of browsed around and randomly got one. And the one that I got called Fitness Point Pro. And it turns out that it's pretty much perfect. So if you want to log exercise that you do, either in the gym or by yourself, cardio exercises, etc., Fitness Point Pro is a pretty good way to log those. That is what I'm using. That is our one-minute tech review. We need a song for the one-minute tech review. All right, eventually. Okay. Sorry, I have a Stack Overflow podcast cup, which makes a little bell. There we go. I'll use that to divide the segments.
Doesn't get more professional than this, people.
Okay.
All right.
Preparing Constitution. Let's do this one. Oh, I got to talk a lot on this podcast. Next week, I'm going to start divvying these up among my minions.
I laughed, and then I realized that was a minion.
No, I'm going to come to work at 8:15 and say, you look really enthusiastic. You're here at 8:15. How would you like to do the Constitution question on the podcast? As you know, we're preparing a Constitution for Stack Overflow. Each week, we bring you a proposal. Your listeners will decide whether the proposal goes over a new Constitution results from last time. Okay. Last time, the question was, at what point does this weekend... No, on what day of
this
the week...
This was the worst question ever.
So confusing. Does this weekend and next weekend mean something different? I don't know what the pro or con is with the results of last week. Question, here's question expert Ilana Yitzhaki.
So we got con 83%. And if Jay, if you want to explain what the pro and the con was...
You remember?
Yeah, no, I think the easiest way to lay it out is the pro were a bunch of words I said without thinking about them, and then the con was a slightly different bunch of words that were mostly the same words in a different order.
But we still got 83%.
That I also said without thinking about them. And then Anil tried to fix it, and that didn't really work, and I tried again, and it made it worse. So let's just tell him what he's won.
Yeah.
Timothy Birrell, he said con, and he wrote a bunch of code in JavaScript.
Which he fit all in one tweet, which is amazing.
Right. So if you'd like to see this, you can go on the blog and check it out. But Timothy, you are the winner.
We'll put it in the show notes. Thank you very much. Today's question. Okay. Sometimes you buy one of those little tubs of yogurt or hummus or Alouette
cheese. Is that the right
cheese.
Way to say
yes,
that
it's
word?
Hummus. Hummus. Yes, it
yes.
is.
Yes, yes.
Why is that? With all
because
the pedants.
Because the other thing is like dirt that you put in your garden. The way you pronounce it.
But okay, with all the pedants around me, how has no one made this clear to us yet?
Because they can't pronounce
it. People need to say it when I'm by the refrigerator. They're what? It's called what? Hummus. What is it? Can you say it again? Hummus.
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 Hummus. Oh my God. Like hummus. I'm not trying the accent part I'm going to get wrong. I'm saying if I were saying it in an anglicized way.
Hummus.
Hummus.
Hummus. Oh, hummus. Hummus. It's actually hummus in hummus. Hebrew or Arabic. Hummus.
And let me ask, is it a dialect thing where like, is the reason we haven't learned the right thing that in other countries that have it, that make it originally, they would say it differently?
Well, because they speak different languages. Now, can we finish my question, please? So you bought some hummus or some yogurt
right.
or Alouette cheese or one of those other things that comes in a tub, like sometimes guacamole.
Alouette and cheese, interesting. The herb kind or
yeah,
the...
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah,
yeah, sure.
It comes
sure.
in a little tub, product. Comes in a plastic tub.
Yeah.
It has a plastic lid, which you can remove and take off. Yeah, the first time you get it home, you remove the plastic lid.
A stiff plastic lid.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's another thing under there.
Like a seal.
The seal.
A seal.
Right.
Which is sometimes plastic, sometimes aluminium or aluminum, as you would say.
Okay. Yes. So the question is.
The question is. Now, there are two schools of thought. One is that you peel off the inner seal and throw it away. And the other is that you leave it on because it provides, in some way, psychologically, a little bit of extra protection for the food.
Wait, what?
This is a good question.
This is
a
good
question.
This,
right? The fact that you
I've never
that.
Examined
you,
this
David.
Behavior in myself, but I leave it on and
you
there's
actually
no good reason
yeah.
to.
What?
And Jay, you take it off and throw it away? Or this has never happened to you because you only make fresh food? You never buy grocery store.
He makes
store
his own
hummus.
Sour cream.
He makes it from chickpeas, tahini.
It's the same way. It's the same way when I pull apart the two pieces of like waxy paper that surround a Band-Aid and then put the Band-Aid on.
Right.
I don't think maybe I should take at least one of those waxy pieces and stick it back
it.
On top of the Band-Aid on my hand.
No,
and
you
the
don't
whole
stick it on.
Stay there.
You sort of
what
pull
would
it halfway
do?
Off, and then it
you
just sort of falls
you know,
back on.
You pull it three quarters of the way off.
Yeah,
and then you sort
yeah.
of put it back and sort of tuck it in place and put the plastic
and
back on top of it.
You've achieved two things. Yeah. Half of it is totally covered and half of it is temporarily covered in a way that adds no protection and will annoy you next time.
No, actually, it's always covered. It's only not covered when you
It's just
open
not sealed anymore.
What do you think
Haven't
that is?
Have you ever eaten hummus
It's not
upstairs?
An airtight seal
First of all, I didn't even know we had a thing called hummus upstairs.
This, all right, this hummus. Is a really good question. We need to
what?
Let the
wait,
answer.
Wait, I would like to hear anyone offer any rationale for what is helped by leaving it on there.
But,
extra
but most people do that.
It is not extra
it's
protection.
It's true. You are
it
correct.
Is.
That's why this is a great Constitution question.
Because
that's
crusty.
What people think. That it's providing more protection over the little plastic thing. And yet, they probably even know that it doesn't, but psychologically, they're like, I'm just not going to throw this away. Plus, it's got like a tiny bit of hummus or guacamole still stuck to it. And you're not going to eat it now, but you figure once the whole thing is empty, you might just have a little piece of pita left and zero hummus. Because getting the hummus and the pita to end at the same time, practically impossible. Only Israelis can do it. But if you have one piece of bread left over, you might, at that point, need the little bit that's stuck to the inner lining of the
this is
plastic.
Not a very good justification.
The most important takeaway from all this is I was a little sad that guacamole didn't have some funny different pronunciation that I never knew before.
Guacamole.
But I can't even, when you start,
pretty
you
much have, all the initial
it's guacamole.
Letters are
Wow, David, you've got a good one.
Thank God David is on
is there like
video
a
chat instead of actually in the room.
So
hala.
Hala, I can do hala.
Pretty good. That's pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
But when you start, you have two things going on. So one is a resealable thing.
Right.
And that's its purpose.
Yeah.
It and creates an airtight creates seal.
Airtight vacuum, whatever.
But it can be removed and put back, which is
Stop
important.
Stop trying to
once
influence
you have opened
the voters,
the thing.
Jay. Yeah. Let them vote.
There's a second thing, which is a second seal. And it's probably a slightly better seal, but that's not its purpose. Its purpose is a seal that can, once broken, indicates it's broken. Like, one of the main reasons for the inner seal.
It's just to know that the hummus wasn't tampered with in the grocery store.
I'd argue there's
like, somebody
things.
Didn't open
yes.
the hummus,
yes.
put in a couple of...
Yes. It's harder...
Actual right. chickpeas or something.
Right.
close it. It's like a prank. You'll be eating the hummus, and you'll be like, oh my God, there's a whole chickpea that
this
didn't get
like
around.
It's like the recurring fear of like, oh no, somebody's putting razor blades in the Halloween candy.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
I'll cut them all
tainted,
in half.
Tainted Tylenol.
That yes. was a real thing, but the razor blades in the apples didn't even make sense.
Because
A, how do you get a razor blade to an apple?
Please move on.
In a way,
Jay,
you don't
you're
notice.
Just gonna have to let this one go and let the voters. This is democracy in action.
No, we're
gonna
move on.
Trust the voters. Podcast, I'll bring you upstairs. I'll take a look at the containers of hummus,
and then
you can
vote.
Decide.
And then you should be permitted to vote.
I'll go look at hummus in person.
Yeah,
but first I want to go back to the
well,
razor.
Maybe I'll do a commercial break, and you go look at the hummus.
Can we talk about the razor blades for 1 second?
Sure.
Because when I was a kid, everyone was super panicked about this.
Yeah.
And here's
yeah.
what happened every
yeah.
Halloween: is every Halloween I'd go trick or treating,
yeah.
and strangers would give me candy, all of which probably had like battle axes hidden inside it or something that was
well also
designed.
Sugar, which is 10 times worse than
Correct.
Just like an actual razor blade or something.
Correct. And then I'd get home, and my parents were super responsible. They wanted to be
yeah.
good parents.
Yeah.
And so we'd go through this exercise where I'd have a big like pumpkin and like a sack and
yeah.
another, I don't know,
yeah.
receptacle full of
yeah.
candy.
The leftover
And
parts
we would
of
go
Batman
through this
costume.
Exercise where they really were concerned, responsible parents, and we'd spread it all out on the dining room table and they would look at it and they
yeah.
would like touch a few of the pieces and then determine
which
these
ones?
1,000 pieces of candy are obviously safe.
Yeah.
And we'd replace them all in the things and yeah. then we would eat them.
Oh, see, I thought this was going to be a really clever way for them to like, you know, take away 3/4
well,
of the candy.
What were they doing?
So
like,
well,
what
did you ever get?
Doing?
Was it all like little individually packed Reese's peanut butter cups when you were growing up, or did you ever get like a handful of Jordan almonds?
I feel like you're trying to get peanut butter in as many times as possible.
Jordan
just
to
set me off because it'll
sponsor.
Kill my child.
They sponsored our show. I have to do it.
I remember there were a lot of individual, like little twisty wrapped Tootsie Rolls, not very well sealed.
Yeah,
and then like a few other like a lot of those mini Hershey bars, and then of course there were always like two people
bar.
On the street you hated, one of whom gave you an apple, and one of whom gave you a check for $1.
Check for $1.
And man, that was
thank
the
God
worst.
You didn't have my mother; it would have been a pencil and raisins.
Wow,
oh,
your mother is
were
the
terrible.
Least
raisins
popular
were,
person on Halloween.
Slap in the face! You avoided that house, and you went back to the house that was giving out full size candy bars.
Yeah,
because that was gold.
Full size candy bars—that's so
Wait,
rare.
The
very
we
rare,
got broken
very
bits
rare.
Of pottery, like a. Like a flower pot that had broken into shards, and you would get one chunk of it. Okay.
Oh.
Well, we couldn't afford individual candy bars. Okay. The question is, do you throw away the subliner? Pro, you do throw away the subliner. Con, you keep the subliner until you've completed the entire container of hummus.
Great.
Post your answer to Twitter using the hashtag #StackOverflowPodcast with pro or con, and your explanation, short but sweet. Make it fit in 140 characters and blunt. I've somehow cut and pasted Jay's completely messed up script from 3 weeks ago into this week's script.
You're welcome.
And it's like short but blonde. What? It makes no sense. Post your answer to Twitter using the hashtag #StackOverflowPodcast with your pro or con explanation, short but fat, and fit it in 140 characters. That is Twitter's requirement, not ours. The best explanation, whether on the winning side or the losing side, will be read on next week's podcast, and you will win a Stack Overflow podcast sticker. We have a couple extra podcast stickers, right?
We do.
I can volunteer one of those. We used to have Stack Overflow stickers. You'll get one of those, too. But today,
ran out.
You're going to get a special Stack Overflow podcast, which is a whole new thing that nobody else has. I have them right here. They're extraordinarily
very,
very
cool
rare.
Design.
Beautiful, very rare, very... beautiful design. I hope we didn't make too many because they're not, you know, how many people?
Limited
need?
Edition.
We Super made
limited.
Exactly 11.
There are 11. Okay, so this is a little, you're going to get one.
They're individually numbered.
I should go through and number them all. Submit your ideas for future constitutional amendments. One of them might be named after you. That's it.
Great.
Okay. And it's time for our developer story.
Oh,
it
we
is.
Have a guest.
We have a guest.
Hi.
Hi, Sarah. Thank you for joining us.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Joel only had time to read the abridged version of the biography we found for you online because you've won 72 different awards. Like, it looked like you were yeah. EGOT somewhere in there. I feel like...
For those listening, I actually paid
also
them
a 30 Rock episode.
But yes, featured on a 30 Rock episode. You have a Stanley Cup, as I understand, or the Stanley Cup, is the sports
no.
people say?
Yeah, I'm really good at curling.
So.
Are you the slidey stick pusher or the brush the icer person?
You know, I can switch off, you know, dual talented
rotate.
That way.
Is that normal? Is that how it works?
Yeah.
Wow.
But SVGs, I want to know about SVGs. So I thought SVG was just a Soviet version of a PNG.
It is. In Soviet New York, the code pen is loaded with you.
Yeah. And also because we don't have a lot of bytes really available to us in Russia or in the Soviet Union. So we need to conserve them and make everything as compact as possible.
The NGs are rationed there, basically.
Yeah. Yep. So the way they use the SVG, which is just like...
Okay, wait. We jumped ahead. We didn't get sorry. What does Sarah do? Introduce her, Jay.
Sarah is... Okay, ready? Sarah is the co-founder of Web Animation Workshops, along with Valhead. She's also the author of SVG Animations, an O'Reilly publication. So she can speak with great authority on SVG, which I know both David and Joel are interested in. Runs a front-end master's workshop.
We call them books.
On advanced SVG animation. So you just take your beginner SVG questions elsewhere. They're a waste of her time. And I think, as Joel alluded to, you ran UX design and engineering at Trulia, which I believe got bought by Joel's cousin, if I understand correct, Joel, by Zillow.
That's right. No? He spoke at my work while I was working there.
Spencer Raskoff.
Excellent.
Oh, you mean me, Joel Spolsky, not Spencer.
Yeah, you. Okay. No, Spencer spoke a few times.
Yeah, I imagined.
I know you thought I was done because it's so long, but Sarah, I think you alluded to the award. Sarah won CSS DevComp Best of the Best Award. So that's when they give you the best award. And everyone's like, yeah, but is it the best? And they have to clarify. It's the best of the best. As well as Best Code Wrangler from CSS Design Awards. And you have been a web developer for over 15 years now, as well as a scientific illustrator, which, if I'm not mistaken, you draw the inside of people's bodies in books, yes?
Actually, sometimes. But yeah, that's medical illustration. But yeah, scientific illustration is more like drawing dead lizards and snakes for a living.
Wow, you made it creepier. I was not ready for that.
Wow.
Okay. Wow. And an undergraduate professor.
Can you draw peanut butter?
No, it stops at insides.
I'm going to put goddamn stairs in front of your office, even though we work on the same floor. Yeah. And where were you an undergraduate professor?
I was an undergraduate professor at this school called HISA, Hellenic International Studies for the Arts, and it's accredited through MassArt in Boston.
Excellent. Well, that's an awful lot of things. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me.
So you guys, you're super excited. You're both dancing around like my children in the bathroom. Do you want to ask Sarah some SVG questions? I know you're very excited.
Wait, let's do Dev's story first.
Oh,
Bit of background. Sorry. How did you get started in tech and code?
So, I've been coding for a long while. And when I first started, it was because I was a scientific illustrator and they used to need drawings of lizards and snakes because cameras have apertures. And so there's always going to be a part that was clear and always going to be a part that's kind of blurry. And drawings, every part is clear. You can see every detail. So I would draw with this thing called the camera lucida, where you could see your hand and the thing you're drawing at the same time. So you can get it really correct down to the millimeter. And then they came up with this camera that would take pictures at every level and then composite them together. So I was not needed for that job anymore.
No, but you were replaced by the robots.
Yeah, you're like the forgotten blue collar workers of America, basically.
I know, it's true. I'm a coal miner. It's true. So they wanted to keep me around. So they asked me if I could build websites. And at that time, CSS wasn't even really taken off yet. So all it took was learning some HTML. So it was a much simpler stack. And I was like, sure. So I spent a lot of time learning industry standard tables with the webmaster there, and then, kind of grew my development from there. So I actually got to learn things incrementally and each part of the stack incrementally. Other people have to learn all of it at once. So I feel bad for them.
And what do you do with dead lizards today? How has it changed over time?
Yeah, now I just look at them. They just sit on my desk and I stare at them.
More of a hobby. Okay.
So, that's
okay.
Yeah. Okay.
She animates them.
Would you consider yourself as much an artist as you would a developer?
Yeah, I mean, I guess these days I spend all my time coding, so I don't spend that much time doing painting kind of things, but I still manage to bring some design elements into the code that I do. So I think about both. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very artistic coding. I mean, just looking at your website, your homepage, and the code pen, especially some of the things that you've made, I mean, they're, impressively designed, not just impressively coded.
No, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think SVG is awesome for this kind of stuff because you're basically drawing with math. So I really get into technical stuff and I really get into artistic stuff. So it's kind of a really nice cross-section of the two.
Okay, so let's get into SVGs. So tell us, just for the, not your totally uneducated listener, but your average developer, what's so great about SVGs and why should they use them?
Okay, so SVGs are crisp on every display, which means that you don't have to do any image replacement for retina screens and responsive. You don't have to cut a million images for picture or source set or any of those kind of things. So you're delivering one graphic, which is super awesome. They're also super flexible. It's in the name, scalable vector graphics, scalable. So they kind of like,
it has to be true if it's in the name.
Yeah, it has to be true then. Just like the hospital logos. So that's really awesome. They have a navigable DOM, so you can dive right in there. And because they're built with math, you can, you know, bind them to data and make data visualizations with them. You can make them bounce and flex and do all sorts of things that, you know, bitmaps are really great, but they don't have that kind of like, you can reach inside them and move them around kind of capabilities. They're also accessible. You can put title and aria labeled by tags. So that's really good for screen readers. So the list goes on kind of, there's just a lot of stuff that you can do. And we're kind of only hitting, like tipping the iceberg. They're also really good for performance. So if you design them appropriately, that you can load a graphic that's like 3 kilobytes instead of 300 kilobytes. That's something I really like too.
Well, that was huge. A stunningly detailed pitch for SVGs.
I'm glad we managed to get those out of the Soviet Union before it collapsed.
Glad we exported that technology. So it seems like SVGs are becoming more and more common. What's driving that growth? Why do you think sort of more and more websites are moving in that direction and moving away from sort of bitmap, PNGs, or GIFs, and so on?
Yeah, I think one of the things is that it's better supported now than it used to be. It's supported across the board. If you go to Can I Use, it's all green now. So there's no things getting in the way there.
Even Safari?
Even Safari. Oh my Even goodness. Safari Mobile. So oh really goodness. Good stuff, you guys.
So in the old days, we used to make fun of Internet Explorer, but now
yeah, I even IE4. Does IE4 support SVGs?
IE4, yeah, I test on that all the time.
It was probably an ActiveX plugin that did it.
Mosaic.
Remember that?
ActiveX. Oh, having nightmares. Having nightmares, Joel.
Yeah, I had to hack IE6 for like a year and a half. That was like half my life. That was a terrible year of my life.
Everybody. Oh, my goodness.
So because you only have to deliver one graphic, you have a lot less work to do. So I think, you know, any developer is excited about having less work to do, right? So that's another issue. And then another one is performance, because you're like literally, you know, using something that's so much smaller. It's just much faster.
So speaking as a layperson or idiot, as the case may be, what are the limitations? Why wouldn't you use... My sense is it's not good for things without super like crisp definable boundaries. Like you wouldn't use it for a photograph, right? Presumably.
Right. Yeah, totally. So like if on your about page, you wouldn't like swap out a picture of your CEO with a, you know, cute little cat graphic. Well, maybe you would.
We might. never say
that.
Replace
it with a robot is really the question.
You could put a picture of a goat. Would that be better?
A whimsical vector goat. Absolutely.
A whimsical. I want an ibex.
Some hummus.
I want an ibex eating hummus.
Oh, is an ibex a goat?
Yeah. Like a goat.
And so the difference is that SVGs are vector-based, not bitmap, right? And so you can't just take a picture and replace it. But a lot of the web and a lot of the graphics on the web are, like, all the designers are designing vector-based, and then they were converting them to bitmaps to go to the web. And somebody said, hey, that's dumb. What if we just put vectors straight on the web? That's how I imagine the conversation going.
Yeah.
Probably a lot more committee meetings than that.
There's also the displays with different resolutions and stuff. Like when Retina started coming out.
That's a major thing. I think flat design kind of went in that direction too. And, you know, pretty much all of the like extraneous graphics that are not goats with hummus can be done.
Sarah, you don't have to buy into our stupid jokes.
But we appreciate you trying.
Although we appreciate it. Yeah. And how about peanut butter?
Next week's going to be all about salt. We'll see how you like it.
So tell us a little bit about SVG animation, because this is something a little bit less common. You see a lot of SVG being used for static images, but I was sort of vaguely aware that SVG could do animation, but seeing some of the stuff that you did, it's kind of amazing. So tell us sort of, where do you see that going on the web? Should more people be looking at doing SVG animations?
Yeah, totally. I think actually like SVG animations are really, really good to convey meaning, because if you have something like a data visualization where you're showing how things grow over time, it's like much more meaningful if you actually show it appearing on the screen as, you know, things kind of did appear. Like if you're showing like all of the Walmarts across America and when they showed up, which is actually a D3 block, you can actually have it come on using time. So time can actually be pretty meaningful to convey stuff, especially if you're trying to ramp people up on your product. People are really drawn to things that are moving, that we're just biologically trained for that, because if there's something in the bush that's going to murder us or we need to eat something, we kind of
fear. Fear is what I want to inspire in people when they're on my website. That fear sense that just in the corner of their eyes, a lion.
My next SVG animation is definitely going to be peanut butter. So yeah, I think animation is really powerful in that way. It can definitely be overused. And I talk about that a lot and how to use it like when it's necessary and not like, you know, turn your whole thing into a flipping bobbing thing. But because SVG has a navigable DOM, you can just slap IDs and classes and all of those things that you're kind of used to as a web developer and move them around. And if you build the graphics in something like, you know, Vue or React or another JavaScript framework, then you can move them around and address like issues of state. Like you can transition state appropriately with them. So there's all sorts of like really, really kind of cool things that you can do. So you can make it beautiful and meaningful and performant, all of the cool things on the web.
So you've done a bunch of these really cool animations. You can see at, we'll link it, but your codepen.io/SDRAS. What's your favorite one of these that you've made, if you can pick a favorite?
Yeah, I think it changes every couple months. I just put out a React page transition one the other day. So right now I'm kind of attached to that one. That one's like probably
the triangles
on the top right now. Yeah, that one's the triangle
it's
one.
It's cool how it flips into the map. I played with that one.
Oh, thanks.
It's like, yeah. Right, so there's like a thing where like the graphic flattens and becomes like a map. It's really cool.
I actually just shared the introvert one with a friend of mine, very much an introvert. I thought he would appreciate it because he also has a motorcycle. So
Sarah Sweden actually showed that one on stage on one of her talks and was like, who in the audience is an introvert? And nobody raised their hand.
Which makes sense if you think. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
How many of you can't raise your hand?
So yeah, that one's good. I have one that's called Everyone Except Tim, which is like a really old one. It's not that well made, but it's funny. So I like that one. Don't look at it if you're offended by people flipping the bird.
Okay. Nice. I'll have to take a look at that.
Now I'm interested.
So how do you make these? Like, are you using a tool to make these? Are you hand coding them or a bit of both? Like,
I'm hand coding them. So the images are usually graphics. Sometimes I make the graphics, but usually I'll find them online. Either they're free or like I purchase graphics sometimes if they're characters or something and play around with them and kind of rebuild them and stuff. Like there's a Huggy Laser Panda Factory in there. Yeah. That one's just like built from, I drew the pandas and then I got a bunch of different like factory graphics and put them all together.
Did you draw the inside of the panda?
I didn't draw the inside of the panda. I did draw the panda lasers though.
That's so sick. You only draw the inside of lizards. What's wrong with you, Alana? God.
Yeah, you gotta like, you know, make sure that you're only drawing the insides of certain animals. So all of the animation is just code. And I actually kind of believe that it should be, because people tend to like say you need to learn a bunch of other software, which I think is hard to learn, like After Effects, and then you have to turn it into stuff for the web, which I don't know. That seems like a weird workflow, especially if you can just code it online and then just have it be done. So yeah, I experiment a lot with a lot of different web technologies and I like a lot of them.
So when you're on CodePen, you see three different languages up here. You're writing each one of these in the different language.
Yes.
So for our listeners not familiar with CodePen, you're looking at HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, I think, for all their stuff right now.
And so you're writing it for all three?
Yes.
Wow.
And if you are checking out the response of Huggy Laser Panda Factory, do not just enjoy the whimsical animation and move on. Be sure to pull the levers because it is truly adorable.
Well, that's the whole point. I mean, it tells you to do that right at the top. Otherwise, there's no pandas. If you don't pull the levers, there's no pandas.
Yeah, and make sure you size the screen down to mobile sizes because that's really the fun part because it's kind of organized like Lego blocks. So they reconfigure.
Whoa,
based
the whole machine
on the...
changes.
Yeah, and did you, is this your thing? Because it was super cool. It actually told me to size my screen down.
Yeah, yeah, I wrote that.
Like there's like a dynamic thing that says, nope, your screen needs to be narrower. And I did that. And then it's really nice. Solved my problems up front.
This stuff is really cool. And for the listener, if you're not looking at it right now, one of the coolest things is that, I mean, it's on CodePen. You know, it's not like you're obfuscating the JavaScript or something. You can see exactly what it does and you can fork it and try changing things and, you know, really see how it's all put together. So this is really cool.
Yeah, I try to write a lot of open source software so that people who are learning can play around with it or fork it or, you know, borrow pieces for their own stuff.
So speaking of open source software, we share an interest in sort of how community dynamics work. And I know you've been working in open source and thinking a lot about some of the behaviors in sort of open source communities. And I'm excited to hear what you've been thinking about there.
Yeah, actually, like, I guess the thought that's been going through my head a lot lately was about popularity. I think that there's like an idea in open source that the more popular technology will be, the better technology. And sometimes I think that that's not true. Sometimes I think that there are technologies that are backed by big companies that people tend to gravitate towards because they kind of surround themselves with it like, oh, well, if it's good enough for X company, it's good enough for me. And then I see all these other technologies that I kind of play around with and they're built by a few smaller people But I think people get shy about using tools like that because they're worried that they'll continue. But it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, because then, you know, if the community doesn't surround it, even if it's a better technology, it will fail. So I guess the thing that I love about open source is that it's this open community. And the thing that I'm critical of is whether or not something needs a corporate sponsorship to actually be taken seriously.
Well, even without a corporate sponsorship, I remember in the 90s, everybody was trying to decide between MySQL and Postgres. And Postgres was just technically a better and more reliable database that just had more functionality and ACID and all these kinds of things. But MySQL, for some reason, was just way more popular. And a lot of people just chose MySQL knowing that it was worse now, but expecting that it would get better faster due to that popularity and thinking there would be sort of a critical mass around that. And then there was a really long period of time where MySQL actually was better than Postgres just because it had, you know, so much development on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's like a really strange thing, right? If like you come in from the beginning and you're watching that, I mean, I guess like part of the reason I'm thinking about this a lot is because I'm into Vue, the framework, and it's done by a core team of developers, some of which are funded by things like Patreon. But, you know, unlike some of the other big JavaScript frameworks, it's not backed by a huge company. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's such an eloquent framework. Like, I've worked with a bunch of them, and I just think it's such a good technology. But I do worry that people won't use it. And I've heard people say, like, oh, well, it's not backed by Google or something. Like, why should I play with it? So I guess that's part of it.
I think a lot of examples, actually, like, I think Rails was that way. It was, like, not really such a great environment, but the cool kids were all using it. And so that actually led to everybody not only using Rails, but contributing to it. And as open source, popularity can be a self-fulfilling prophecy.
It's like a critical mass thing too. I mean, from my perspective, like the fear is, especially if you're like building a business on it, you build it on a project
ASP
that gets abandoned, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we've had a few of those where there were open source projects that were like core parts of Stack Overflow. And then the maintainer just decided, I'm done with this, which is fine. That's their decision, but it leaves you in an uncomfortable position of like, well, do we port it or do we take over the project? Or, but on the other hand, that can happen with corporate sponsors too. Like that's also happened with companies that were backing a project. And
yeah, we built fog bugs on BB script in classic ASP.
which was clearly the superior technology choice.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's like a really good point. Or you're like beholden to whatever features they're trying to build, right? Like if a big company pivots their technology to like have a new breaking version that you're not really into and you're not going in that direction, then you're kind of going in that direction whether you like it or not.
Absolutely. VB to VB.net was like that.
Angular's gone through some breaking changes
going through that.
Too.
Python 2 to Python 3 a little bit, except that it's more of a fork than a... Everybody's moving.
I mean, it's tough from their perspective too, because sometimes like it is the right decision with a project to take breaking changes and to kind of to really fix the core. Otherwise you're stuck, like, and you can't can improve it, and people will eventually abandon it because something better came out and you're stuck with a bad one.
Perl is a good example of that.
The buy-in of a major player is always a plus, and there's certain places it's sort of make or break, right? Like obviously with like more closed ecosystem, like Swift, right, has to succeed. Like Apple's going to ensure it is. But I think when you're talking about sort of things that are less so, it feels like the one that is not good still can't win. Like the backing helps, but it's just not going to matter. It's like in consumer products, right? You're like, how could these things fail? Google's behind them. Like Waze and Google Plus are definitely going to be dominant eventually. Like they got Google's backing.
I don't think Google Plus is ever going to be like, it's just like the party that the rich kid threw. And you're like, no.
Yeah, that's an apt metaphor. For one of my parties. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess like I just as a developer, I guess I'm like rooting for the underdog here because I think it's awesome. I'm just like, this is just a really cool thing. And then I hear everybody go like, oh, but who's going to develop it? And I'm like, well, this guy, you know, but I think that there are some corporate sponsors coming there. But, you know, I don't know. It's just something that's been in the back of my mind.
So Vue is your passion of the moment. Give us your pitch for it. You know, why should more people use it? What's so great about it?
Well, I think Vue came along after a lot of the other frameworks. And what it did was, after dealing with some of the pains of some of the other frameworks, basically took all of the cool things that they liked about all of the different things and put it together in a way that doesn't feel like a mishmash. It feels really eloquent. So when you're working with it, I think there's also like a, you know, a thing in software development sometimes where people kind of over-engineer without realizing it because they think that complexity means like it's cool or it's better. Vue made it you know, a real big stab at making things as simple as possible. And in that way, I think it's really, really great because it's easy to read. It's easy to maintain. I think, you know, as a consultant, I jump into tech stacks that I'm not familiar with all the time. Being able to just jump into a tech stack and be like, oh, I know exactly where everything is and how it's organized and can immediately get working is a pretty big boon to development and, you know, time saving. So yeah, I think that some of those reasons, they've also thought about like the rendering is like really, really slick. It's not clumsy at all, like some other things that I've worked with. So yeah, I mean, I still like all of the other frameworks. I'm still like a big fan
of
React.
All of them? There's got to be one that you just can't stand.
Yeah, Cycle is out. No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm a naturally curious person. There's good stuff about a lot of the other things that are out there. But yeah, for right now, I'm just really enjoying working with it.
Okay, great. So we're going to put you down just to, you know, drum up some controversy here. We're going to put you down for Vue is great, React sucks. We're going to put that in the headlines. That's okay.
No one should be mad about that, I'm sure.
Great, great. No, we want them to be mad because then they'll come listen to the podcast. So just back to SVGs or Vue, I guess. So if somebody's interested in these technologies, what's a good way to get started?
If you're interested in SVG, I think the first step is realizing that if you know HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, as you do as a web developer or even any of the frameworks, it's not that many steps away. You already know most of the stuff there. So I think that was like a huge breaking point for me, that unlike some of the other things like WebGL, where you're kind of learning a new syntax, SVG is very familiar. And, you know, not to plug my book too much, but I'm going to do shameless self-promotion. I did write a book with O'Reilly and spent 2 years writing it to make it pretty accessible and easy for people to get started with that kind of stuff too, and use a myriad of technologies like CSS, JavaScript, Request Animation Frame, GreenSock, React Motion, and Mo.js. So kind of trying to get the bases covered there. So that's a good way to start with SVG. In terms of Vue, their docs are amazing. I wrote some material too, but like you probably don't need it because their docs and guides are really well written.
So the book's name for our listeners is SVG Animations. I gotta think Sarah will get a slightly larger tiny cut if you go to shopo'reilly.com than if you bought it from Amazon or some third-party reseller.
Buy it from her website.
Oh, can you buy it direct from
the
website?
That's not the way royalty agreements work.
No? Really?
I wish it was.
That's messed up. Oh, yeah, you'd know being a...
But buy the ebook, right? You get more money for an ebook than a printed book.
I get the same amount, actually.
Oh, really?
See, this is the...
Friggin' O'Reilly.
Printed books, man. Sarah said she spent 2 years writing a book, and then someone's got to go cut down a tree that took like 40 years to grow. This is crazy.
Here's the solution. Crazy. If you appreciate Sarah and want to, you know, help her, just buy 2 copies and give one to a friend.
Yeah.
Or buy 10 copies.
Yeah, and use them to stack up your monitor.
Then she clearly gets more money.
Yeah, you can use them to put all of your lizard skeletons on top of, you know.
I was thinking about that. Yeah, that's what I was hoping to use them for.
So people were taking cheap shots at O'Reilly last week. When you were writing a book there at the O'Reilly compound, were there like a lot of kids making sneakers, like sewing them or anything else you want to like just...
Actually, O'Reilly's been pretty good to me. I don't have any negative things to say about them, but I could make stuff up if you want.
He's just so likable. I like that we've started painting him as some sort of dark despot as opposed to what he appears to be in most interactions.
Actually, I was invited to the Foo Camp. They invite like friends, family kind of people, you know, once a year to their campgrounds, and they had a bouncy castle, which I destroyed. If you want to hear that.
Good for
story.
You. Good for you.
Now we have to hear the story.
Actually, I got pulled out from a data scientist. I was bouncing in the bouncy castle. I'm really small. And this guy jumped really high and like shot me into a pillar. And the pillar was like the support for the whole thing. And the whole thing collapsed. And he had to like yank me out of the collapsed bouncy castle.
I was bouncing in a bouncy castle and a data scientist had to pull me out when it collapsed. Sounds like something Watson would say as it starts to reveal it's going insane. Like that's when you realize Watson is breaking down and he's probably going to kill us all.
Watson is Watson.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay, well, that, I don't know, that's hard to top that one.
I feel like I'm going to have new nightmares about collapsing bouncy castles and dead lizards that were like not problems in my life before today.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you, Sarah, for coming on.
Oh, where can people find you?
I'm speaking at React Europe in 2 weeks, showing some product that named Workflow that I've been working pretty hard on with, you know, a team. I'm a con consultant for them. It's pretty awesome. So yeah, check that out if you like React.
Cool.
No, we hate React. Vue is the future.
Vue is where it's all at.
And people can follow you on Twitter at
Sarah_EDO.
Great.
That's O as in O.
Done.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for coming on. Please feel free to hang out with us as we go through the news.
About 1 million Google Docs users were the targets of a phishing scam made to look like a Google Doc request this week.
Ooh.
Google said it stopped the attack within an hour and that they are working on a solution to prevent this from happening in the future.
I was super disappointed that I didn't get it because everybody was talking about it and, you know, warning each other about it. I suspect that there were probably about 10 warning emails for every one of these things that actually went out.
Hey, Jay, how do you feel about it?
So first of all, I preferred the headline I read that said extraordinarily sophisticated phishing attack.
Did you fall for it?
Did you fall for it?
See, my sense is this was sent to this was sent to everyone's friends, then all of their friends' friends. And so you guys with no friends did not get the phishing attack, the sophisticated, very sophisticated.
Oh, it's a friend network kind of friendship.
So yeah, so I got it. So I got it.
But did you click on it?
So it's not really. Is that the important question? Is that because I feel like
a million people.
So listen, in my
not that bad.
In my defense, there's a couple of moments that I'm embarrassed about. But in my defense, mine came from a friend of mine who I expected a document from. Like it was an unusually like aligned. Like
well
it wasn't like this out of the blue.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And so I got it from someone who I was expecting a document about. We're traveling later in the year, and we were talking about it. He was going to send a thing, and so I got this thing from him.
This is your fault for not using Trello.
And so it's a spreadsheet thing. And so I get it, and I like, oh, that's weird. Here's a thing from Andy. And so I click the button, and what happens then?
Andy fell for it.
There was
the
a
really
slightly weird screen. I think so. The first thing you see is you see the like, oh, it's a Google Docs needs to know which account you want to use. Seems kind of normal. It's a Google Doc.
That happens often if you especially have
and it shows me both of my accounts.
Or you just think, oh, it's logged me out on having to log on again.
Right. So I click one of my accounts, my home one. I pick the personal one. And so I click that, and then it loaded a little long. Like it was a little bit delayed. Something's a little bit off. And I actually paused and I'm like, a little weird. And I was a little nervous for a second.
Yeah.
And so I looked up in the URL.
Yeah.
But like a simpleton. Like I don't really know how to check it properly. I look up and I see like there is a like www.google.com thing, which is probably all before like four pluses or whatever makes none of that nonsense make sense.
No, that's not actually how it worked, but we'll go finish your story.
But I did glance. I had a moment of sanity where I glanced at the URL to be like, does it look right? And it had google.com in it, and I felt pretty good. And then I kept going. I can't remember. I think I may have gotten a screen saying like, is it okay to have for Google Docs to have permissions, which probably should have freaked me out.
That was where it happened.
And I think I hit okay. But interestingly, I believe this happened, David, you'll tell me this is wrong, exactly at the moment our IT staff had gotten in front of this and like blocked everything. Because when I clicked the dumbest thing I could possibly click, the next screen I saw was a Cloudflare screen that said like,
oh, Cloudflare.
Everything's busted, but you're at our always-on screen because somebody has always Cloudflare always on.
Oh.
And it never went through.
Are you sure? Did you check your apps?
Well, yeah, because as soon as... It was funny. I want to shout out to our awesome IT staff who are so great in so many ways. But we got this email. If you're one of the idiots who did click this thing, make sure you notify us. And so I sent IT staff like a note saying, I did this. Here's the steps. This is exactly what I did. Here's what happened. And I'm not kidding. Like, it was less than 1 minute. Like, 30 seconds later, Michael Rosa, one of our talented IT staff, is in my office, like, may I look at your computer security settings with you? I was like, of course you may.
And then he hosed down your entire computer.
Well, we checked the apps that I had permissioned with Google, and everything looked okay there. And then he picked up my computer, doused it in lighter fluid, and lit it on fire.
Good plan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the actual hack was, and I'm firmly in the camp that this is Google's fault.
They allowed
this to happen because what it was is somebody created an app called Google Docs.
Yes.
And that may have been like obfuscated with Unicode or something. I haven't seen a definitive thing on that. But basically what it appears is Google Docs is asking for permission to access your Google account, to which anybody is going to say, yeah, of course Google Docs can have access to my Google account.
Right.
But that's the thing. It was somebody who was not Google who made an app called Google Docs. So you were giving some random app access to your Google account. They registered an app with Google.
With Google. Like a Google Play app?
Like a Google
login.
No. Like it's a Google login, which giving them API access, basically. You use your authentication token to log in and access all your stuff. This is like if you do log in with Google anywhere, it's like it's OAuth. I don't know if this is exact, but it's like OAuth. So then what they do is it was grabbing like the first 100 contacts and then it emails all of them because one of the things you just gave it access to was your contacts and the permission to send emails. And so it's got that now. So that's how it propagates itself.
Right.
And then it doesn't seem to do anything malicious beyond that, but it's really hard to know because you just gave somebody access to your Google account and
who knows?
It's hard to know what they went
things.
And did. They might have scraped a whole bunch of stuff in addition.
Yeah.
They got a ton of real email addresses. I don't know how much that's worth.
Yep.
The thing, nothing. That, the true genius of it is they got Google itself. They basically got you on a Google auth screen. You haven't been sent to some rando screen.
It's a real auth screen. So that's the thing. It's not fake.
You're on a Google owned screen, and Google itself is asking you if you're comfortable with Google Docs.
If you want to give permission to Google
having control.
Have
and that, the brilliance is like they got Google to ask you that question, is what made it kind of so
it was a real URL. So even your defense mechanism of like check the URL didn't work in this one because it was actually
a
legit Google page saying, oh, hey, this app wants permission. And you said yes because it just says it's Google Docs. So the mistake is that they ever allowed something to call itself Google Docs. And so I'm really hoping that wasn't as simple as somebody just typing in Google Docs as the name of their app. They had to like use some weird Unicode hacks to get it to go through. But now the advantage of it working that way was that Google was able to kill it on their end immediately. And so that might have been the thing you saw, though. I don't know why it would be a Cloudflare notice. But because they were running through Google, Google could just kill it.
Anyway, my world has not blown up, and so far nothing bad has happened to me.
Okay. Google Docs phishing scam. Any other news?
Yes, we do. Facebook is disputing an interpretation of an internal study reported by the Wall Street Journal that claims female engineers' code was rejected 35% more than their male counterparts due to gender bias. Facebook claims the gap in rejection rates was due to rank instead of gender.
Aha. Uh-huh. So they don't promote women at Facebook? Is that what they're saying?
Basically, yes.
Yeah, those things are, what's the word, correlated, conflated?
Yeah, causation versus...
So this was like an independent, I think. This wasn't like their study. The first one's an independent study done by a Facebook engineer, did this analysis. She found something like a disturbing pattern. And then Facebook did their own, saying, well, that didn't have some of the data. There's other, she only used tenure, and the tenure isn't actually characterizing seniority correctly. Let us do a full analysis for you. And they came back with their full analysis, and they were like, actually, if you incorporate rank, there's still a discrepancy, but it's so small, it's statistically insignificant. It's fine, once you're way in the rank. And someone said, great, can we look at your rank data? And they said, no, our ranks are secret. That was the first answer. So the first thing they used is a part of the data set they would not show anyone else. I'm not saying they lied, but there's an interesting thing right there. And
coincidentally,
to the point you guys made, what they never seemed to connect was...
You know how they calculate rank, actually?
No.
It's the number of engineers' code that you submit that get accepted. The percentage acceptance. So if you get more than 90% acceptance,
that's what determines your promotion, actually. You get promoted.
Then you're ranked.
But their conclusion is almost that dumb and circular, is it not? Like, which is like, if we accept a world where we should be concerned there is probably this bias, because we all know about implicit bias and all this stuff, they're like, no, don't worry. Once you incorporate how we decide how qualified you are, super qualitatively, in a secret way, there's no difference in how men or women are being treated once we've mistreated you in that system already.
Okay.
So what does it mean for code to be rejected? Is it like you don't get paid that day? Or
pull requests.
What is going on?
They have a big red reject.
It's merge or pull requests or something that are getting
somebody
rejected.
Somebody else rejects, and then you got to go fix it?
Yeah, or a code review where they said, declined or like, you know,
I guess that makes
punted
sense.
Back to go fix it. Somebody did a similar thing on GitHub, right, with public open source projects and found that, which is maybe what prompted this person to go run it on Facebook's code base. And they found something alarming that obviously Facebook didn't want reported in the press.
Mm.
Presumably, Facebook didn't do much to address this person's concerns. And so they decided to take it public to force Facebook to actually do something. In which case, Facebook took the exact wrong approach. And instead of saying, this is troubling and we're going to look into it and, try to address it, they said, you can't trust the data. Here, look at our data. This is better.
Yeah, and it's weird. Some of the comments that guy made, who I guess gave the report, they sounded like he was thinking about it and he was concerned about bias in some way. I don't know. He had the right phrases to say, except it's weird he didn't at least say, we find it troubling. That what's obviously being revealed to us, there are fewer women in senior roles, right? Which is not uncommon, sadly. But like, there's no commentary on that. Like, it's
they already know that.
I know, but even if he's not willing to jump out and say, perhaps this situation is the result of bias, what is an easy thing to say that shows you actually care and you're like thinking about it is, even if that ranking feels correct, we're uncomfortable having a culture where it feels like there are not enough women advancing in ways we could be supporting them to help do. Like, I don't know. There's such a missed opportunity here to at least start the right conversations.
Okay, well, they started it. And you have gone and wasted another hour of your life listening to Stack Overflow podcast number 108. Recorded Thursday, May 4th, 2017, Stack Overflow headquarters. If you enjoyed this podcast, please tell a friend, spread the word. We need more subscribers or we shall never be as popular as S-Town. By the way, if you have any questions for me, we're going to do a segment called Ask Joel. So just tweet to @StackPodcast any questions that you have for me, and I'll pick the best ones and answer them. This podcast is brought to you by Peanut Butter, the best kind of M&Ms. a critical part of Reese's Peanut Butter Cups and have another Nutter Butter Peanut Butter Cookie. Our audio engineer is Carlos Hernandez, audio editor is David Greenlee, technology concierge Michael Rosa, producer is Jess Pardue, executive producer is Caitlin Pike, for Sarah Dressner, David Fulton, Jay Hanlon, and Ilani Tucky, and Joel Spolsky. Have a not entirely terrible day.
Yay!
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bouncy, bouncy, ooh, such a good time. Bouncy, bouncy, shoes all in the line. Bouncy, bouncy, everybody somersault, somersault, summertime. Everybody sing along. Bouncy, bouncy. Ooh, such a good time. Bouncy, bouncy. White socks slipping down. Bouncy, bouncy. Stilettos out of no-no. Bouncy, bouncy. Ooh, bouncy, bouncy. Ooh, every time I bounce, I feel I touch the sky.
My daughter is allergic to peanuts.
Which are not nuts. Oh,
they're not
oh.
nuts. They're not even related to nuts. It's
that
like a
reminds
dirty,
me.
They
I
they
figured
legumes.
Out what to use yes. all the Trello money for. I'm going to start.
I got to be honest. This is kind of a moment I've been curious for. So
that's right.
I'm excited.
I was waiting for
you know
this.
How
Let's
people are always telling you peanuts are not nuts.
Cashews
are not nuts.
Also.
Okay, so I'm going to start the Society for the Reform of Nut Designation. So my society is going to recategorize. This is going to be the only thing we're lobbying for. I'm just going to lobby in Washington to have peanuts and cashews reorganized so that those are actually nuts. Thank you.
Hey, I got to call out your fake news here, Ilana, because the cashew is not a legume.
What?
It is a nut that is botanically related to mangoes, pistachios, and wait for it, poison ivy.
You're kidding. I've been lied to.
My whole life is in shambles.
Do dates literally grow on trees?
Dates grow on trees, yes.
Yeah, so just like potatoes.
Dates grow on Tinder and Grindr and those kind of apps.
Those aren't dates.
There's a constitution question. Does it count as a date if you never learn the person's first
Wait,
name?
Yeah, if before meeting your only interaction was a swiping motion, can you consider it a date?
Guacamole!